Rami Makhlouf in for Steve Sparky Pfeiffer on Wisconsin Sports Daily, served up by Wendy's and live from the 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. What's usually my favorite segment of the day, Charlie's Sounds of the Day, coming up at 3:40. I don't know if I can call it my favorite segment of the day today because I got Eric Name coming up to talk some Bucks, my favorite person to talk Bucks with coming up at 4:20, and my favorite guy to talk a little Packers with as he covers them for the Green Bay Press Gazette, PackersNews.com. Ryan Wood joins me now on the show. Woody, how are you this afternoon, my friend? Long time.
You know, Rami, I got to tell you, it's the owners' meeting. It's a full day. It's a full couple days. There's a lot going on down here in Southeast Florida. It's a full day, and I got a text this morning said, hey, Rami wants to talk to you. I dropped everything. Changed the whole day. It's good to talk to you, Rami.
My guy, good to talk to you, too. You made Brian Gutekunst move his press conference for me, didn't you, Ryan Wood?
Heaven and earth. Heaven and earth, Rami, just to talk with you.
Before we, and I appreciate that, Ryan, and the feeling is mutual, my friend. It's been too long. But before we get into what Gutekunst said today, let's just go back a little bit since it's been a while since we've talked. And let's talk about what the Packers have done in the offseason, just broad view. We don't have to break it down move by move, but there were a couple of spots defensive line and wide receivers specifically that people pointed to as areas of need for the Green Bay Packers, and that was not where they went in free agency or any of their offseason moves. Were you surprised by the route that they did take?
I think that a lot of us would say that it's been a quieter offseason free agency period than maybe we expected coming in. This is a team that, after kicking the can down the road for years at the end of the Aaron Rodgers era, found itself in cap hell. And this is the first year where it's out of cap hell. So there's money to spend. I think there was high expectations going into that. And just as soon today as Brian Gutekunst was informed, hey, wasn't the most active free agency period, he interjects. He said, top of the league and spending cash. And he's not wrong. They're top 10 and spending cash. So it's not like they didn't spend money. It's where they spent the money. And where they spent the money was where we know that Brian Gutekunst really values versatility. It's in the secondary with Nate Hobbs. He's a guy that can go inside at slot, be a nickelback. The Packers very much believe he has the length, the ability to play on the perimeter. That gives you options in the secondary. And even more significantly, Aaron Banks coming in. The Packers see this as really kind of hammering home what became their identity last year, which is that run game with Josh Jacobs, the inside zone scheme. They feel like they're getting better at two positions on the offensive line with Aaron Banks coming, not just one. They feel good about left guard, and now Elgton Jenkins goes from left guard to center, where they feel like they're a lot better. We'll see. Time will tell. Obviously not hitting receiver very hard. Mecole Hardman, that's not moving the needle at receiver. That's something they're going to have to address in the draft. And the big elephant in the room is the big guys up front defensively. No edge rush, no defensive line. They've got a lot of work to do in the draft at those areas, but they have spent money. It's just kind of surprising money.
You know, and not taking that big swing. And I think, Ryan, a lot of people would go, well, yeah, I mean, that's what the Packers do. They're not the big swing free agent type of franchise. But I think people who have that viewpoint or have that opinion of the Packers, they're still stuck in the Ted Thompson era. I mean, you look at Brian Gutekunst just last year, he took a big swing on two free agents, one on offense with Brandon Jacobs and then Xavier McKinney on defense. I think that's why those who were paying attention were looking at this offseason and seeing the money that he spent and spent in the past and thinking, well, maybe another big swing is yet to come.
And Brian Gutekunst is very aware of the reputation around this team when it comes to free agency. He's hyper-focused. He doesn't live under a rock. I think that's why, as soon as it was brought up today, it was immediate, instantaneous reaction. Hey, this is not maybe the most aggressive. The last thing he said before the exit interview, immediately after the season, show more urgency to go win championships. Hey, has this been urgent? Immediately, instantaneously, at top 10 in the league and spending cash. And so he knows the reputation. And it was almost like this is not the Ted Thompson Packers. They spend money in free agency. Sometimes it's just not predictable.
What do you think was the thinking behind sitting out the defensive linemen that moved in free agency and the wide receivers who moved in free agency and through trade season? Do you think it's that they like what they see in the draft, or they like what they already have in their own rooms, or, and this is specifically when it comes to the wide receivers, they think there's another level out of Jordan Love, which will get another level out of those wide receivers.
You're talking defensive line or receivers here?
All of them. Just in sitting out those two positions, do you think it's because they like what they got or because they like what's in the draft? And specifically when it comes to the receivers, that Aaron Rodgers can also raise their – or Aaron Rodgers. Jordan Love can raise their level of play, would he?
Okay, let's hit both. Let's start with receiver here. The big name, the big splash that was just out there waiting, begging to be taken, the big swing here for Brian Gutekunst would have been DK Metcalf, right? Obviously. He goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers instead. Couple things. One, it was a second-round pick to the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's not a conference opponent. It would have been more than a second-round pick for the Green Bay Packers. Not much more, but more. There's also something to be said, and clearly with the Pittsburgh Steelers, they were comfortable with the money, which is market price. They were comfortable with the fit both on the field and in the locker room. But if you're spending a lot of money, and even if it's market price, $30 million a year is a lot of money for DK Metcalf. If you're going to go that top of the market, you better be comfortable with the fit in all areas. I'm not saying the Packers aren't. I'm just saying when it is that kind of money, it really accentuates all those facets. Ultimately, not being, you know, he went to a team in a different conference, team that spent a lot of money for him and that second round pick. As far as the other side of the ball, defensive line, I think it's a multitude of factors. One, it's a very strong defensive line class in the draft. Now is an important time to remind everyone that the offseason is not over. A major player acquisition process is coming up in Green Bay later this month. It's a loaded defensive line class. I would expect Brian Gutekunst to hit that hard. But when it came to free agency, Brian Gutekunst is looking at this as, look, last year, after years of being in the 3-4, you make this monumental shift to the 4-3. He expected that to take time. I think Brian Gutekunst saw improvement as the season went along with that pass rush, not to the point that it needed to be, but he's expecting year two to be even better. Ultimately, when he looks at what they have internally on this roster with Lucas Van Ness, Kingsley and Igbaré, with Brenton Cox Jr., who had a strong second half of last season, and you compare those guys who are on a rookie deal to a Joey Bosa, who heaven knows if he can stay on the field, to a Hassan Reddick, who heaven knows if he can bounce back after last year's holdout March season. Those guys got $12.6 and $14 million for this upcoming season, respectfully. I think Brian Gutekunst does the calculation and says, you're not getting much more with a gamble on Hassan Reddick, a gamble on Joey Bosa, compared to what you're going to get on a rookie contract, not paying free agent dollars with these guys.
Would you be shocked if they didn't address one of those two positions with their first round pick?
Shocked for the first round pick might be a bit strong because, boy, how long have we been covering the Packers draft? First round picks tend to always kind of shock us. So at a certain point, you stop being shocked at what always shocks you. I'd be shocked if they didn't hit both positions very hard, very early. They have to. That absolutely needs to get done.
Is anybody's seat hot here, Ryan? Because for the first time this season, I did hear Packers fans start to voice some displeasure with less so Brian Gutekunst, but Matt LaFleur and him not quite being able to get over the hump as a head coach and sort of running into a wall as the Packers did this year. Is anybody's seat hot in terms of the pressure to win in 2025?
The Packers don't operate that way organizationally. We know that. I think if you look throughout the league, having patience and continuity is a time-tested formula for success, not just in Green Bay. But if you look throughout the league at the organizations, the franchise that are the most patient, that keep the most continuity, they're usually the ones in the playoffs every year. Your Cleveland Browns, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the bottom dwellers, who may get a postseason berth once a decade, but that's it. You're not going to have the sustained success if you don't have the continuity. So that's a time-tested formula. With that said, they're going into year three of Jordan Love. They had cap dollars. They spent cap dollars. I think Brian Gutekunst, the guy that drafted Jordan Love and opened this new window, deserves some benefit of the doubt in how that money is spent. But ultimately, going into year three, if they don't take a significant step forward, at the end of this upcoming 2025 season, you're going to start hearing some disgruntled, impatient fans for good reason, because this is a title window, and this is now is when you go and get him.
You know, I was talking with Ryan Wood of the Green Bay Press Gazette and PackersNews.com, and I also I caught your name. I was reading Pete Doherty's mailbag yesterday, Ryan, and somebody brought you up and a quote from your podcast, the Green Bay Nation podcast. I want to know if they took you out of context, and if so, what exactly do you mean by this? They asked Pete about a recent quote where you said that Gutekunst doesn't draft at a championship level. What exactly do you mean by that? And with that being said, how bad does he need a first-round hit in the 2025 draft in Green Bay?
Well, only one GM drafts at a championship level, right?
Fair.
That's how he wrote.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, you know, I mean, if that's the curve, then Brian Gutekunst does not draft at a championship level. I still think that at the end of the day, Brian Gutekunst deserves a lot of benefit of the doubt, simply for being the guy with the guts, with the fortitude to go and draft Jordan Love when he knew it was the least popular thing in the world, and look at him now. So you get a lot. You get a longer leash when you make a bold decision like that, and it pays off in that way. With that said, first round picks, they're not good.
Yeah,
most of them not been good. They finally broke the third round curse with Tucker Kraft, but look at many other third round picks. Look at the recent draft classes. There's some hits. Edgerrin Cooper, that's a phenomenal pick. First linebacker taken off the board in last year's draft, second-round pick. Phenomenal pick. There's a lot more that they, you know, Eric Stokes, it didn't work out there. Obviously, the injuries are part of that. So I think that, yeah, he needs to be better. There needs to be more consistency in hitting on picks. Championship level, Howie Roseman, Philadelphia Eagles. That's the guy. He drafts at a championship level.
Can you say that a GM is doing his job when his team is winning football games as the Packers do on a consistent basis despite not hitting in the first round? Or Ryan, do you look at this and should fans look at this and go, well, yeah, this is pretty good, but imagine how good it would be if we didn't leave all this meat on the bone with first round picks. It's great to hit in the second, third, fourth round or later and find guys who can contribute to your roster. But as a GM, don't you have to hit in the first round to really, really maximize your resources and assets and to not be feeling like you left something on the table at the end of the season if you come up short?
It doesn't matter so much the round as when you look at the total draft, what you're trying to get, if you want to be at a championship level, you're trying to get three studs per draft, right? I mean, that's what it is. It doesn't matter if it's a sixth-round pick. Zach Tom, he was a stud. He was a fourth-round pick.
True.
First-round pick, it doesn't matter the round. You can find them up and down. Now you have a better chance in the first round. That's why first-round picks are more valuable. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to come at the start of the draft, though. It can come throughout. I do think that it's premature to really give an indictment on Brian Gutekunst drafting right now, and here's why. Brian Gutekunst, since this new window opened, he's been in the middle of a process, a youth movement, a volume shooting, bring in a ton of guys, let them grow together, and it's still they're still very young. Time's going to ultimately tell whether that process worked out or not. I don't think going into year three of Jordan Love, we fully know yet. For that reason, I think 2025 is a huge year for Brian Gutekunst. I think it's a huge year for Matt LaFleur. It's a huge year for Jordan Love. This is a very pivotal season that they're embarking on.
Talking with Ryan Wood. You can follow him on Twitter at @ByRyanWood. And I was scrolling the timeline today, Ryan. And we're going to play some of the sound back later from Brian Gutekunst talking to you guys down there in Palm Springs at the owners' meeting. But he's trying to put a good face on the Jaire Alexander situation and saying they're not ruling out him playing for the Packers in 2025. That's just lip service, right? That's just the clock is ticking on Jaire Alexander. It's just a matter of when it strikes midnight.
I think what rings most true when it comes to how Brian Gutekunst feels about the Jaire Alexander situation is that he absolutely does not want to lose Jaire Alexander, his top cornerback the past seven seasons, the first pick he ever made as the Packers GM, someone that they believed in at one time enough to make him the highest paid cornerback in all the game. He absolutely does not want to lose that guy for nothing. Now, it might ultimately come down to losing that guy for nothing. At some point, he might be released because it would be very surprising if he's back. But Brian Gutekunst said there's flexibility with time and when a decision needs to be made. Really? they're on the clock as soon as they're on the clock, right? As soon as the draft comes to Green Bay, a decision really ought to be made by them, because he's looking for a trade. If there's no trade to be found and you're not bringing him back, the only other option is releasing him. I understand that Brian Gutekunst said he's not going to slam the door shut on that. This time of year, no GM closes any option. Everything's available. That doesn't mean that everything's likely. Brian Gutekunst does not want to lose Jair Alexander for nothing.
Last Packers thing I wanted to ask you about, and really it's more of a football thing. What are they saying? Because we know they were the team that brought forth this rules proposal change to ban the tush push. What, if anything, are they saying to sort of justify that, or the logic behind that? Because it just seems like sour grapes to me, Ryan. Like they and a lot of teams around the league, because apparently there's some support of it, a lot of teams around this league can't execute that play as effectively as the Eagles, or to a lesser extent the Bills do, and they can't stop it. And so because for those two reasons, they don't want those two teams to be allowed to do it. How do they justify bringing this rules change proposal forward?
Rami, here's what's fascinating to me. Here we are at another owners meeting, and unlike this one, going into this owners meeting, there was no Aaron Rodgers drama. There was no Davante Adams trade. There was no Aaron Jones release. Those were literally the last three owners meetings.
Yeah.
So you're going into this owners meeting thinking, huh, this is pretty calm. And what do you know? The Green Bay Packers are at the very epicenter of the hottest button topic of this owners meeting, which is their proposal to ban the tush push. It's fascinating to me. It's going to get heated. Behind closed doors, there's going to be internal politics. Obviously, Nick Sirianni, Shane Steichen, his coaching tree, they're going to be loyal. I think you're going to see a lot more coaches look at, hey, this is an automatic play. The NFL in general doesn't like automatic plays. Look at what the NFL did with the extra point, moving that back because it was so automatic. They don't like things that are automatic. The tush push has become automatic. Other teams have been able to replicate it with great success. Nobody does it like the Philadelphia Eagles. Nobody.
Yeah.
But other teams have been able to replicate it, the Green Bay Packers being one of them. That's the ironic thing. Because as soon as Tucker Kraft last season motioned under center in short yardage situations, they probably became a top five QB, in quotes, tight end, sneaking team in the league. Tucker Kraft's ability in their version of the tush push is one of the best in the league, and yet it's that team that is proposing to ban the play, knowing that if it happens, they have to tweak their Tucker Kraft tush push. So, yeah, sour grapes, there's certainly some of that, because no one does it like the Philadelphia Eagles. When there's one team that does it so much higher than all the competition, all the competition is going to want to do something about that. It's just kind of ironic that the team that's doing something about that is one of the better tush push teams in the league.
I know one of the things that they're sort of hiding behind is player safety with the tush push, even though there is no data to back that up. Do you know if the Packers are one of the teams in support of expanding to an 18-game season? Because that seems contradictory to me. That seems a little bit hypocritical if you're citing player safety for a play that gets run less than 0.5% of the time in the NFL, and yet you want to add a whole another week of plays. Do you know if they're in favor of the 18-game season?
I don't know that off the top of my head. That would have been a very fascinating question to ask Brian Gutekunst, not come to think of it. That's easy to explain, though. It might be disingenuous, Rami.
Yes.
But follow the money.
Yes.
And, oh, by the way, if we get rid of the tush push, if we keep cleaning up the game safety, adding another game, we're making the game safer. We're not making the game more dangerous.
How?
We're making the game safer.
How is that?
Because there's no tush push. You're not creating a human wall on both sides. You're not using your body like a spear and lowering your neck. Hey, I'm not saying that that's right. Obviously, that's gibberish.
Yeah.
But that's the NFL for you. That is exactly what will be coming out of their mouths.
That will be the case that they make. How you feeling about your Mets, buddy? That Juan Soto signing had to be pretty fun for you, huh?
Oh, I'm still screaming all the way from Florida about that one. Yeah, that's first home run and the Mets' first win of the season.
Bomb.
Pretty phenomenal. You know, it's amazing in all the sports, and obviously for myself and any Mets fan, you're seeing it up close. It's amazing how quickly things can change.
Yeah. So,
sometimes for the better. It doesn't always get worse in this world. Sometimes it gets better. From the Wilpons to the penthouse of having the most money in the league. It's amazing what money does in baseball. It's amazing that the Mets have it.
It's pretty wild. That's Ryan Wood. He covers the Packers for USA Today, the Green Bay Press Gazette, PackersNews.com. Also check out the Green Bay Nation podcast. Ryan, real, real pleasure to catch up and talk some football with you, my man. Hope all is well, and we talk again soon.
Been too long. Let's not wait as long next time. Nice talking with you.
Yes, it has. Always a pleasure. There's Ryan Wood. Check out his work inside the Green Bay Press Gazette and PackersNews.com.